The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Hey there, welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Last week, you may have heard part one of my exclusive radio interview with Matthew Boyer. He's the infamous bookie associated with the interpreter for Shohei Ohtani. Now we present to you part two of this amazing interview.
So we're now, what, about 6 months into the relationship where he's now lost, you know, millions and millions of bucks? Or am I off time-wise on that?
No, I'd say, yeah, 6 months might even be four. It might have been 4 months in when we're already there. And the first wire I saw where I actually paid attention, I believe was a $500,000 wire where it said Shohei Ohtani on it. That's when I had an oh moment. And that's when I realized that, you know, this is going to be very, very good or very, very bad. And either way, I knew kind of both, and I ended up being right. My gut was correct.
So you see Ohtani's name on the wire, and do you ask Mitsuhara, hey, is it Ohtani making these bets? What's the story? How do you bridge that conversation?
That question's been asked of me more than anything in
world.
I truly didn't never ask. And in fact, if you look at the text messaging between me and him, which the government released, at the very end, when it all hits the fan in, you know, March of 24, he says, I really screwed up or something like that. And I said, look, it's all a cover up, you know, Ipe, come on. And that's when he says, no, it's on me. I really did it. Or, you know, he didn't say I stole at the time, but he basically owned it, that it was all him. So that's the only time I actually referenced to him, like, hey, this is really Shohei. I mean, come on, let's be real. And the reason I was saying that is obvious, right? I mean, what interpreter can afford $17 million in wagers? So I never asked, and people ask me, why didn't you? Well, let me ask you a question, Craig. You have a guy who's, you know, sending you $500,000 every couple weeks and is happy and doesn't seem distressed, and you're giving them everything they want, and they're the ones requesting all this, and you deal with celebrities, and you might think it's Shohei, because I kind of did, let's be real. Why would you even ask, right? Why rock the boat? You know, you just want to continue your stream of income.
No, I get that. It's easy for me to sit here today, or for anyone to be an armchair quarterback today and go, how could you not ask? You saw his name on a wire. But I do get it from your perspective. It wasn't out of the ordinary. I dealt with celebrities. A lot of celebrities have a bag man, a buffer, who takes care of your kind of ancillary things like this. And he never seemed to sweat paying me. So it's easy for me to say, how did you not ask? But I also get it from your perspective, why you didn't ask. Because all you know is that the guy's paying you whenever you ask him to pay you. And oh, by the way, if he is connected to Ohtani and they have some kind of arrangement that you know nothing about, you know full well he's good for the money if that's the case.
Yeah, not only that, there's moments in life where you really don't want to know, right?
I mean,
you know, the less I know, the better. Even if I'm in court, I'm testifying. It's like, you know, you just don't want to know. And of course, I knew there was some things going on that I didn't want as far as that name involved. But at the end of the day, the greed of me was like, hey, it's $500,000 every couple of weeks. I mean, who's going to be happy? You know,
there was one story when this thing first broke. There was one report, I'm going to ask you if it's accurate or not, because I honestly don't know if it is, where there was a suggestion that he maybe was late in some payments or owed you a bunch of money, and he hadn't paid, where someone representing you and your interests said, we're looking at Ohtani right now. If you don't pay, we have no problem going to talk to him. Did anything like that ever happen?
Yeah, that sure did. And let me be clear exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So he owed me $24 million at that time. And he was always pretty good about communicating, but he was getting a little less and less about the communication and a little bit more dark. And when someone goes dark, as you know, in my world, when I was a bookmaker, that's the worst thing you could have. So I always told him, just communicate, just, you know, I'm patient. And he kind of was dark. So ironically, a good friend of mine lives in the Newport Villas in Newport Beach, California, and saw Ohtani walking his dog. And he called me up and said, hey, Shohei's right here. You know, he knew the situation that I was owed $24 million. He says, do you want me to go up and talk to him or say anything? And I said, no, of course not. So I immediately text Ipe and made it seem as if it was me, you know, there present, seeing him walk his dog, and described the area so he knew it was real. And it wasn't a threat. Of course, people now say it's a threat. Well, it's a semi-threat. It's a threat like I'm going to go up and speak to him, but not a threat of any danger.
Right.
And I wanted to rock the boat to get him to respond and just talk to me. Yeah. So that is true. And all of that was the actual fact. He was walking his dog and nobody said a word or went up to him. And I had access to Otani anyway. I mean, he lived in the villas in Newport at the time and he was working out at that gym. My friends used to see him all the time. So I could have did that many times. I chose not to, and it worked because he immediately responded.
He did. Once you said, "I'm staring at your boss, do I have to go talk to him?" he all of a sudden texted you back.
Yes, yeah, very fast.
We did work. Recently it's come out, you know, the government has released some audio tapes of Mitsuhara talking to the bank, trying to get wires sent to you or, you know, to someone representing your interests. And obviously, you know, they weren't able to decipher, was it Otani calling because it's Otani's account versus, you know, an imposter, in this case, you know, Mitsuhara. And I'm wondering, when you heard those tapes, which clearly you've heard by now, you know, what does it make you think as you kind of go back in time with some clarity to him kind of duping the bank into thinking it was Otani sending you the money?
Well, listen, let me first of all say I never wanted to be part of a fraud case or someone stealing. You know, I've had a gambling problem my whole life, and I've borrowed money, and I've done things I shouldn't have, but I've always repaid or did what I could. But I do understand, being a gambler, you know, that you'll do anything to continue that gambling issue, and I never want to be part of that. So it made me a little bit sick in the stomach on that. Then to be part of this whole, you know, now I'm in the media portrayed as a bad guy, as a predator and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. But that being said, it makes more sense to now, looking back, to kind of the way this account was handled, how he had to wait for a wire from the Angels to come into this particular bank account to send me a wire, and why there was some delays in payment. And if you break down the math of what he made for playing for the Angels, he was made a lot more money in endorsement account, and that's what I've been told. That endorsement account was separate, which, you know, ePay didn't have access to. So it all starts to make more sense. And again, I never asked, you know, who was betting and who wasn't. There are some big question marks for me, though. You know, I want to say this. Everyone wants to know, was Shohei involved? And obviously the government and MLB have swept that under the rug and made it all ePay. But there is a little question mark as to if he knew. Did he know? Did he actually, you know, tell Ipe, hey, you know, you owe a few bucks, you're jammed up, you know, you can borrow a little bit of my money? That's the part that's in question. And let me tell you why. Tisha Thompson had a ESPN interview with Ipe Mizuhara the day that this broke. It was like an hour long. And then all of a sudden, that interview never got aired. Dodgers came in and changed this whole story and narrative. And we don't know who's lying. The only people that really know the truth to this moment, in my opinion, are Shohei and Ipe. And I was the third closest to this whole story and of what's true and what's not. And I still don't know. But factually, that interview is never been aired. And I just really, my curiosity is, I still to this day don't believe that Shohei Ohtani made any bets. He's never been a gambler based on anyone else that knows him. And you, Craig, know this. If you're a gambler, you've been gambling a long time in your life. You don't just all of a sudden become a massive degenerate. It's rare you see that. You gamble since you're young, or you've always been gambling. And the fact that he's not known to bet on anything kind of tells me that he's not a gambler. But that being said, he seems like he's got a big heart. And these guys were, I mean, best friends.
Right.
And I would help out my best friend if he needed money. I have. But maybe not $17 million, but I would help him. Now, if you have access to an account, and let's say you and I, Craig, have a $100,000 joint account together, and we're buddies, and we're gambling together here and there and going to casinos. And I said, Craig, I'm going to grab a few bucks from the account, borrow it from you. Do you mind? Goes, yeah, no problem. You're speculating I might grab $5,000 or $10,000 of the 100, not knowing I'm going to deplete all 100 because of my right. degenerateness. I think that possibly is what occurred here, but, you know, and then maybe things got out of control and never anticipated him taking that kind of money, of course. That's just my speculation, but that's because, you know, some of the facts that are out there that kind of make me feel that way, but it's all speculation on my part.
Yeah, I would say it seems unlikely. I don't care how much money somebody makes or has, that someone could pilfer that amount of money on such a regular basis, and you as the account owner and the earner of the money never have any idea that the balance is out of whack. Doesn't mean you did anything wrong. Doesn't mean you were gambling. Doesn't mean you were knowingly supporting what he was allegedly doing. But it does seem a little off that you would have no idea at all until the feds get into the picture that you have that type of money missing. That's where I come from on it.
I totally agree with you, especially over like 16, 17 month period. It would be different if it happened over like 14 days because, you know, maybe
sure.
He was traveling, didn't check his bank account. But 16, 17 months, you got bank statements, you got logins, you got so many opportunities to see the money gone. And so that's to me why I still believe to this day that he helped him. And I don't blame him for helping his friend. Of course, it's easier for, in my opinion, for the Dodgers to come in and say he had no knowledge and just sweep this thing under the rug, go win the World Series, keep your head down. You didn't gamble. You weren't, you know, you didn't do any of this. And that's just an easier way out. I get it. I do the same thing.
Well, it's also, you're talking about, you know, the face of a sport, of the great American pastime, which this would be the biggest scandal in the history of sports, bigger than, you know, the Black Sox scandal, bigger than Pete Rose, bigger, you know, than steroids and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and all that. Because of who Ohtani is and what he represents as a global superstar for baseball. So I get all that as well. What's interesting to me, again, is they were best friends. I'm aware of the interview that you're talking about. And what happened after that interview got shelved, the law firm gets involved, and it went from everything Mitsuhara allegedly said in the interview with Thompson is not accurate. He recants all of it. And Ohtani's a victim here, period, stop. No questions are being answered. That's a great dramatic, you know, move from whatever he may have said in the original interview.
I agree. And if I was the Dodgers and MLB, I would do the exact same thing. Not saying they did that, but I believe that that was the move. And I get it. I do the same thing, 100,000%. I brush this under the rug and get my superstar back on the field and look at like the golden boy he is, which truthfully to this day, I believe he is. I think he just helped his friend. I mean, that's my honest opinion.
Yep.
So he shouldn't get tarnished in any way. I mean, it's sad that, you know, he's even involved in this, really.
Matthew, let's take a quick break on that. We'll continue with this amazing story right after this on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have the infamous bookie in the Shohei Ohtani scandal, Matthew Boyer. Matt, let's get back into where we left off. When's the last time you spoke to Mitsuhara?
Let's see. He texted me, which is all in those government texts, March. I can't give you the exact date, but right when all this broke was in March. And then he reached out to me again like a week later for my attorney's contact, which he couldn't use anyway, but just getting some help, and that was it. So I'm going to say middle of March of 24.
Was there like a, hey, man, I'm sorry, hey, I messed up, hey, you know, anything? Or what was the genesis of it?
There was definitely a, hey, I messed up, and he was really down. And then I kind of became his therapist because I felt bad. I mean, he still owes me $24 million to this moment. Clearly, I'm not going to receive that, but that came out of the equation. I already knew that was long gone. I was more concerned about him and his well-being and his mental capacity, along with the fact that he now has to deal with this problem, which, you know, 57 months in prison is no fun time. And then, you know, now he's very frowned upon in the world, especially in Japan. So it's really sad. I mean, I never wanted to see someone's demise because of other gambling. I mean, we've all been through it, and it's not fun.
And I want people to understand this because I think it'll show a picture of, you know, how irrational the compulsive gambler's mind is, especially as he's running out of funds to gamble with. One of the things I saw in some of the documents the government released was the guy went from betting, you know, millions and millions of dollars a week. What was the value of the last couple bets he made with you?
The value? That's a great question. I mean, he would wire me five. This is how it would work. He owed me $24 million. I said, Ipe, with all due respect, you're very honorable, very respectful. I'm not going to continue to raise your credit line anymore. So if you want to pay it down, I'll just take the money off your account. So he would wire me $500. I'd take it off, and he would hope to, you know, win it back. Because here's the problem. I was in a rock and a hard place. I didn't want to continue to get more credit. But I also, as a gambler, didn't want to cut him off where he couldn't gamble because you and I both know how that feels, Craig. It's terrible. And I wanted to give him a chance to win his money back, even though, let's be real, he really couldn't.
Right.
But I just didn't want to cut him off. So I would give him the $500,000 or whatever he would wire, and he would play it. And, I mean, he would bet as little as $1,000. It didn't matter. He just wanted to gamble.
And that's the point I want to make. You're talking about a guy that, over the course of about a year or so, wagered total value of his wagers more than $300 million. And now the desire and need and want to gamble is so great. He's now betting an amount of money that's equatable to literally throwing a pebble in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm sure you've been there. I know I can speak of this.
Yeah.
I was betting $300,000 a hand in Baccarat every 35 seconds. And if I had $8,000 left to my name, I'd start betting $500 a hand because, yep, I only have $8,000 left. And, yep, and it's like, what in the world are you going to do with $500 a hand? You know, like, now you're just gambling to gamble,
yep,
just to have action. Get
well,
the
yeah, because the money's no longer has any value. I mean, I'm betting $30,000 a hand of blackjack. You know, you're out of money. You go to the ATM, you can take the max out, $500, and now you're trying to creatively process, well, I'll start at 100. You know, if I have a good shoe, you know, and it's completely irrational, but in the moment, you know, you run to that ATM machine, right?
You do. You do. You'll feed that addiction at all costs, which is why we've all made poor decisions, including Ipe, me, you, everybody who gambles. And that's why gambling, this epidemic that's about to occur, was already occurring for these young kids looking at LeBron James and Kevin Hart as these mentors for DraftKings and FanDuel. And it's ruining, you know, sadly, a lot of young kids' lives at a very early age. And you're going to see it play out big time in the next 5 years. Just watch.
One of the stories that, just keeping it real, I have a very tough time buying and believing is that at the level he was gambling, from a standpoint of, you know, the amount of bets he was making, in addition to the money, and he's losing and losing and losing and losing, he would have had an insight to what was going on with the Angels, and then subsequently, you know, had he been there long enough with the LA Dodgers, to have had to have made a wager on a baseball game. He has denied that. He has said, I was well aware I can't bet on baseball. But to me, I have a tough time buying that because, you know, you process gambling irrationally when you're at the level he was at. Was there ever a bet? I don't care if it was a dollar. Was there ever a bet made on a baseball game?
I can honestly answer that as no. Shockingly, I see where you're going with this, and I would actually say the same had I not been in the shoes where I've watched the wagers come in. And he never once put a bet on a baseball game. That is a fact. And I'm a shocking fact that I'm giving you because the same reason. When you're irrational, you don't give a damn what you're betting on or how you're getting money or what you're doing. All you want to do is fire.
Right. And to me, the way out of the hole, like if I was down a considerable amount of money, I would think, what's the quickest way out of the hole if I'm going to try to gamble my way back to zero would be, I know that the starting pitcher's got a bad arm. I know that our shortstop's not playing tonight. I would have bet on the information that I had access to that nobody else had access to.
I totally agree with you. But I will tell you that in, call it 30 years of being a bookmaker, this was the worst gambler I've ever seen. And I've seen some really bad ones.
Sure.
And I mean that. So, like, I hate to say this, but I don't think he had much logic in any of his gambling at all. And that sounds wild, betting $100,000 on soccer games. But, you know, he was betting parlays and things that, I mean, if, you know, soccer is one of the hardest things to win at because you have a draw bet, a win on both sides. So you basically have, if they end at 1-1 after regulation and they end up winning in overtime, you lose your bet.
Right.
Which is why the odds are a little bit better. But at the end of the day, I think it's the worst sport to bet. That being said, he was Mr. Soccer, and I don't think he ever cared about baseball, not because he didn't have an edge. I don't think he even thought about an edge in anything he was doing, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, he was just betting to bet at that point. Like, if you're betting on some, you know, random country you can't find on a map and betting six figures on that country in a soccer game that you can't watch, you've probably never seen, you know, you're well beyond just doing anything rationally or smart. And at that point, it's not even a business decision. It's just feeding an addiction is all it was.
100%. I equate it to this. if you and I were betting on a high school football game, you know, literally that we've never seen or even been to, just because we're there, that's how drastically bad this was. I mean, or maybe even an elementary soccer game because, you know, you don't know one player. I mean, how hard is it to even get excited about that? Yet he was. And listen, I've been a guy who's gambled on foot races, and, you know, golf prop bets. I mean, things that many people would just look at me and go, what are you doing?
Right.
So I'm guilty of these things, but at least I have some sort of, I believe, an edge or a reason beyond the fact that I just love to gamble. I mean, I definitely at least tried to pretend I had some sort of education in the reason I'm making a wager. I just feel with him that was not the case at all.
Thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig. Next week, we will wrap up and conclude the entire interview with Matthew Boyer, and I appreciate you very much listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.